Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is September 5th, 2014. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, Extraordinary, Ordinary Forgiveness, and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. She's also the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles and facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. Now, as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and on the left side of the page, click the chat button. You will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. And if you're not already a member, just hit the join button and come into the 1-2 Radio chat room. Now, on last week's show, we listened to some excerpts from workshops given by Ken Wapnick on the topics, what is salvation and what is the world? These are two of the essay summaries that you'll find in the workbook for students, and I chose them because they are the topics that are relevant to the lessons that we're studying as students if we started working on the workbook lessons in January. But no worries if that's not you, because the lessons of the workbook are very holistic. In fact, the messages of the course are consistent, and no matter where you are, whether you're reading the textbook, working on a workbook lesson, or reading the manual for teachers, the message is pretty much the same. You are a child of a loving God, and nothing can ever change that. Nothing you can do can ever change that. Now, we may believe otherwise, but that is a mistaken belief, an error that can be corrected in our minds. Now, many of the core beliefs of A Course in Miracles are clearly stated in these two summaries that we're going to look at today. What is salvation and what is the world? Now, even though we looked at them last week, and we certainly listened to what Ken had to say, when I mentioned them to Susan earlier in the week, she agreed that it would be worth adding our two cents to what we already heard Ken talk about last week. Now, if you missed last week's show, or maybe you just want to hear it again, you can find it in the archives on 12radio.com. But for today, Susan and I are going to talk about those lessons. And I want to tell you a little synchronicity. As I was looking at the material today, I was reminded of how when I go through the workbook lessons and the text too, sometimes I don't want to move on because something is so wonderful, it's so rich, it's so incredible, I just don't want to move on. I want to keep rereading that section or rereading that lesson. And so when Susan was joining me today, we were talking for a few minutes right before the show, and she said, you know, this section is so rich. And it was just such synchronicity because that's exactly the word that I had said to myself. I said, oh my God, this is so rich. So I hope that you will agree with us. This really is an incredible section. So I hope that you're really going to enjoy this today. So welcome, Susan.
Hi, CA. It's so nice to be here.
Well, it is, and I love synchronicity.
Yes, and it is so rich. That is, you know, like so much of the course, right? It just, we were saying, too, that when we go back to it, it's like it just opens up. You know, there's all these secret chambers that we didn't see the first time. You know, it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper, and you're just astonished that of what is being said in every little morsel, you know. And so, yeah, I'm excited that we're looking at these two lessons again today.
Well, and one thing I wanted to tell you that I noticed, and I notice you say this a lot, and I really like it, and that is, we can't fail at this.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I put a post on Facebook this morning, I said, would you like to take a course that you can't fail? You know, that the outcome is just inevitable, and I love it that you always remind me of that. We can't fail at this.
Well, I remind people of that because I'm trying to remind myself because I feel like such a colossal failure most of the time when I'm practicing this. I mean, that's what our ego does with it. You know, I'll never be able to get this course. And, you know, the ego's is always ranting about how we can't do this. How can we include everyone? How can we look beyond form? How can we, you know, give up all judgment when there's so much horror in the world, and you know the what we hear, what that internal dialogue is like, I'm sure. And so So it's, we're challenged to you know, the answer to that, and that's that actually in this section, Salvation and What is the World, the answer to that is that there's a built-in correction, you know. we're safe. We can't fail. We didn't go anywhere. Ideas leave not their source. And Jesus reminds us over and over and over again, that very phrase that you cannot fail. He says, I am so close to you, we cannot fail. You know, no one can fail who seeks to reach the truth. And the reason that we can't fail is because we never left. Mm-hmm. You know, and so he's never flunked a student. You know, that's what the way I like to think of it. And I have to tell myself that a lot. And so I end up saying it to students a lot because it's, you know, the reason that I'm teaching is because I want to hear, I want to learn.
Well, and just thinking about it, why one of the reasons we cannot fail is because, like you said, because we never left. Never. Nothing ever happened. Right. And so it's just a matter of time. Eventually, we will get it. It's right. Inevitable. And in fact, my niece asked me this week, she goes, well, what if you die then? Is it over? You're out of the dream? And I said, no, unfortunately not.
You know? I'm glad that you brought that up because I remember early on in the course asking a teacher that. And their reply was, and it was someone who was oriented toward Ken, thank goodness. Uh-huh. but their reply was, no, you can't, you know, once you're dying is not going to get you out of the ego thought system. And that was such a blow to me, you know?
Yes.
I was thinking, are you kidding me? You know, I was, what about the white light and the choirs of angels? And, you know, I mean, I thought that there was at least at the end of this, you know, physical life. But that's not the course's view on it. This is a dream, and it's when we're ready to give up the idea of a life apart from God that, mm-hmm. that we will really find the salvation that and the real light that we're looking for.
Well, and it goes back to the idea that we're so identified with a body. Because then if we don't have a body, then the dream must end because we right. end. And that's not the truth. And that's right. We can't, I mean, it is kind of disappointing. We can't even die and get out of the dream.
Right, know? Right. And it's because it's not about bodies. Bodies don't die because bodies haven't lived. And obviously, from our perspective, that's not the level on which we practice.
Right. This.
But
right.
that is where it's, you know, we still have to acknowledge and remind ourselves that that's where it's ultimately leading us and that that's a good thing despite our horror.
Yes. Well, and it reminds me of, you know, right up front, right in this first one, what is salvation? It's always interesting to me when we get reminded that salvation and forgiveness and the miracle do nothing.
Right.
That always kind of stops me because it's like, what do you mean they do nothing? But they do nothing because there's nothing to do.
Right, exactly. It's just an undoing of all of the illusions, of all the barriers to love's awareness that we've put there as a defense to protect this idea that we really did, you know, this experiment in individuality that we think we're living out, you know, to try to defend the idea that we really did separate from God, and it's not, it's a lie, and you know, the course, I mean, the reason that we're everyone here is fighting such a hard battle, and everyone here is so exhausted, ultimately, you know, in this constant frantic search for gratification to cover over the nagging sense of you know, horrific loss, is because it's on some level we know this is a hoax, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and so we you know, truly what we really, forgiveness is really just joining with that part of our mind that knows what we really want and really have and really are. And when we are willing to join with that inner teacher, it's just it's really just nothing, it's not a doing, it's just allowing, it's just the admitting that our way isn't working, that we don't know, and opening to the truth, really. And, you know, when we're willing to really have that complete humility, then we will have an experience, however brief, and you know, because we go back and forth with this, but we will have an experience of completion, of being above the battleground, of seeing that everyone is the same, of seeing that nothing here has threatened us or could threaten us, and you know, we will be standing then in a place of true compassion for all, including ourselves, which we've really never given ourselves because we believe we're so bad. And that's why we're constantly blaming it on others, you know?
Yeah, and that's another word that always comes to me with the Course is remember. It's not about finding the truth. It's about remembering, you know, and like you said, the idea is already in our mind. It never left our mind. It's already there. But we cover it up with all this other crap.
Yeah. And it's constantly, I mean, it is, that's right. It's, and it's always, it is there. Well, we cover it up because we, there, you know, the other thought that's, the correction for the thought of separation is in our mind. It's that quiet center just waiting for us to return to it. But the thought that's always circulating in our mind is the thought of guilt, that this really did happen. So we have these two opposing thoughts, and we're not conscious that we have, and you know, that we made any of this up. So we've completely forgotten that we have a choice about which thought to identify with or to remember, as you're saying. And so one is true and one is not, and we're always trying to side with the one that's not true.
Right.
And defend the one that's not true at the expense of the truth. And that's, you know, what the Course is teaching us and revealing to us through the practice of looking at this process and becoming mindful of what we're doing is that, you know, the thought that I'm identifying with is really the cause of all my suffering. And there's another thought that you know, will bring me peace in every circumstance, you know. I mean, it says it's the answer to every problem because, you know, we think that all of the problems are so different, but they're all just a reflection of that one problem.
That one mistake.
Yeah. And all of the people, you know, in this salvation section where he says, God's word is given every mind which thinks it has separate thoughts and will replace these thoughts of conflict with a thought of peace. And, you know, we don't think that every mind is the same. We think that our thoughts, you know, are wildly different from even the people that we're closest to, let alone, you know, our gravest enemies, right? Uh-huh. So, you know, but in truth, we made it all up. The thoughts, there's just the two thoughts circulating in every mind, and every mind has the correction. Every mind has the same, every split mind, split over this thought of separation, has the same decision-making capacity that I do, has the same right-minded correction, you know, the Jesus, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call that symbol of what we really, of our real mind, and has the unreal mind, has the ego. And, you know, everybody will come to that decision-making mind when the pain is enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's it. Yeah. It's inevitable.
It is inevitable. Salvation is inevitable.
We will come to that point. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take us to get there.
Yes.
We cannot fail. We can't fail the Course, but it could take us a really long time to get there.
And that's up to us. Right.
Right.
And that's up to us. And you know, I think you and I have talked about this a lot, but as Course students, one of the most challenging things, and once you begin to really practice this and try to live it, is that even though you feel like, I mean, in my case, I feel like I'm 100% on board with this. it's not true because my thoughts show me otherwise. You know, my judgments, my fears, so it is a process. You know, we are not in touch with how deeply defended we are.
Right.
How scary this is for us. And so, of course, you know, it's completely unfamiliar to us now, the mind. The mind is enemy terrain. And so of course, we're going to fight like hell. A part of us will be fighting like hell to never go there. You know, that was the sort of vow we made at the beginning to protect this experiment in individuality. And so, you know, of course, it's going to take us It took us a long seeming time within the dream to get to the condition we think we're in, and it's going to take us time to go back up that ladder that, you know, we believe separation let us down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I was thinking this morning, too, as I was rereading these, especially What is the World, is all of a sudden this picture came to me when it says, you know, the world was meant to be a place where God could not enter.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I realized, just like kids, you know, when we build a little fort or we build a clubhouse and, you know, you know, the old joke is you post the sign, no boys allowed, no girls allowed. Well, in this case, it's no God allowed, you know?
Yes.
So we built this little clubhouse.
Fortress,
and we've put out our little sign, God cannot come in. But not only that, but, you know, as it goes on, it says, and here was perception born. Mm-hmm. And so that's our own pretense. It's as if we turned away from knowledge because we're going, okay, this is what we're going to pretend. So here again, here's this big, beautiful palace in a sense that we could live in, but we're out in the yard in our clubhouse, you know,
yeah.
doing our own thing with our and pretending and playing our little games. And but here's another idea that comes from the Course that I see in the text every once in a while. And I love this idea. And that is because, you know, you mentioned it earlier that the one great thing about the Course is that it really mixes not only the metaphysics but Western psychology as well. And one of those ideas is that once we have our little game going, we're in our clubhouse and we've got our little pretend game, we literally send out our scouts to find every shred of evidence to prove that our game is real.
So our that little we can, brothers. We send our little brothers out.
Yeah, so that we can keep the game going. And that reminds me in psychology, I mean, because the classic example of is, you know, when you want something, like you want a new car and you decide you're going to get a Subaru, all of a sudden you see Subarus everywhere, right? So it's sort of like whatever you focus your mind on, you send your little scouts out to prove that what you think is true is true. So, I mean, that's what I thought. Here we are in our little clubhouse out in the yard, and, you know, we're sending out our little scouts, like you said, our little brothers, we're sending them out to prove that our dream is true. And we just get entrenched in that, even though, in a sense, you know, in the big house, they're calling us into dinner, you know?
That is such a great analogy. I just love that, CA. That is because that's exactly what the Course is saying. And, you know, we're playing pretend. We're trying to show God, you know, Daddy, look at the better kingdom that I could make. You know, it's so much better than everything you have, and we're trying to just pretend that we destroyed the palace,
right?
And, you know, that is such a great analogy. I mean, the Course is a little more graphic about what the scouts that we send out, because what it actually calls them is the hungry dogs of fear.
Yeah.
Which are my thoughts, you know. I mean, I when I first would read that passage, I kind of loved that passage because I thought about, you know, we're sending out. I wasn't able to process it, but I loved the image of it. And until I realized that I was a hungry dog of fear, that it was me doing this. But that's what we do, because we want them to bring back to us what will bolster our perception of our reality, and, you know, to kind of reinforce what we believe is happening to us. And our sensory apparatus, the Course says, is built. Our senses are all those hungry dogs of fear that bring feedback to us exactly what we want to experience. And that is a sense of victimization. You know, that is the idea that I exist. I really did this, Daddy, at your expense, but it's not my fault. It's my little brothers. It's my little sisters. We need a big family, don't we? So we have plenty of enemies out there that we can target, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we start, and then it just keeps expanding from there, and we have more and more separation, you know. And that's what keeps happening. Separation in the dream just seems to be constantly expanding, increasing, and becoming more complex. There's more and more kingdoms, and there's more and more fences, and more fortresses, and more religions to protect, and more wealth to protect, and more opinions to protect and assert, you know, and it just goes on and on. And there really is no end to it except to come back to the mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that Hungry Dogs of Fear passage that you said you loved, I did too.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing because it is pretty graphic. It's graphic and almost violent as you read it. But, you know, there again, sometimes when people say, well, why do you like this so much, or what was it that hooked you in? It's those passages that hooked me in. Mm-hmm. And even though that may sound ironic or sound counterintuitive, it's because the Course finally told me like it was.
Yes.
It wasn't giving me some fairy story. It was saying, you know, this is what you do. That, mm-hmm. you know, you send out the hungry dogs of fear to just keep your pretense going over and over. And so to me, when I was reading it, it was like a therapist who kind of nailed me.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's like we're busted. Oh my God, that is what I'm doing, you know? And so it was refreshing in a sense to be unmasked, you know, for somebody to finally see exactly what I was worried about or feeling inside. You know, it's like, oh my God, that is what I'm doing. That is what we do. And it felt refreshing. It felt like, oh my God, somebody finally understands.
It's a huge relief, isn't it?
Because yes,
we're walking around,
it's an incredible relief.
Yes, because we're walking around. I mean, if we're really honest with ourselves, most of us have, and maybe, you know, maybe it's just a tiny throb, like it says in Lesson 182, but it's a little pang, a pang of this. But most of us have some kind of sense within that something is terribly, terribly wrong with the way the world works, with the way I'm relating to the world, with the way, you know, I was talking with another friend yesterday who's also a Course person, student, and we were talking about how, you know, there's this whole, how we're kind of just constantly trying to kind of walk around covering this up and, mm-hmm. and constantly, you know, not, as you're saying, not owning up to it, and that there's that there's such a relief when we finally come to the point of saying, you know what, this is happening everywhere in the world, and that, you know, really from the time that I grew up, and she had a similar experience, we kind of came in looking around us and saying, you know, something's really wrong here. I mean, it mm-hmm. seems like there's a covert, you know, there's some kind of agreement that everyone has made to pretend that everything's okay, even though all of their emotions are betraying otherwise, you know, or speaking otherwise. Even everyone is, I mean, even, you know, the whole religious movements that are, you know, we try to be good and we try to go to church and we try to absolve our sins and all of that. And we go on Sunday and, you know, we profess these kind sounding ideas, but it's not the way we live our lives. It's not the way we act toward each other. And so we've made up a mythology in which, you know, God created this. And so mm-hmm. something's wrong, very, very, very wrong with the picture. And as you say, the Course is such a refreshing document and tool for us because it just calls
yes.
us on it. It mm-hmm. tells it like it is. It's the only spirituality that I've ever come to that has that complete, direct, you know, unveiling of the guilt that we're feeling and the disconnect between the way we're living our lives and what we're trying to achieve spiritually.
Right.
And
that's what it feels like to me, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and it gives us, but it gives us a process then of, you know, it's such a relief because then we can say, okay, but we're also not judged. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still okay. You're still a part of God. Nothing really could ever change God's love for you, which means that nothing can change my love for anyone else or you know, the love between any of us that seems to have gone missing. And what a relief that is. You know, now we can begin to learn. We don't know how we're going to learn that, but we have a teacher that's going to show us.
Yes. Now, I have a practical question, and I know you never like it when I'm asking you these practical questions.
Oh, I kind of like the practical more than the metaphysical.
Well, it's kind of like, because I mean, I can hear it sometimes. Okay, CA, you're trying to get way, way, way too realistic or something. But like, for instance, in the What is Salvation, one of the ideas that kind of comes out is that don't support other people's dreams of malice or hate. Although I know that on a practical level, we want to support them. We want to be, as Ken says, normal. We want to be kind to other people. And so how do you separate that out? I mean, like, can you think of an example of how we can concretely look at this and say, like, what would be a thing that you wouldn't be supporting their dream of malice, but you would be supporting them?
Yeah, you know, I can think of lots of examples, actually. Okay. But let's take what I think, first of all, it's really inform you may be doing the same thing that you always did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you may be, you know, let's just take a pretty simple example of a friend, you know, a friend that is coming to you with a problem. In a relationship is very, very, you know, is in tears, is feels, you know, betrayed in a relationship and is recounting this to you or something like that. You can totally join with that person's, with the love within your own mind and listen to that person and hold their hand and be sympathetic without joining with the weakness in them, without so the true empathy is really a joining within with Jesus's awareness, kind of letting go of getting your ego out of the way, and when you do that, what happens is you're still being very, very loving to that person, but in the past, I find with myself in situations like that often. In the past, you know, I would, my eyes would tear up.
Uh-huh.
I would be really into their story. You know, really siding with, wanting to side with their sense of victimization. Whereas mm-hmm. I find that when I'm first, when I'm, you know, making this about my relationship within, with the love that we are. With that teacher, then what I don't really end up siding with that because I know that they're safe. I know that they too have the same power to side with that love that I'm siding with, and somehow that is all we need to do.
Okay, and so I guess maybe what I'm hearing too is, let's take that same example. So somebody mm-hmm. comes and they're very upset about a relationship, mm-hmm. and instead of me saying, okay, let's get him.
Right,
you know, let's slash his tires, or, and even if it's not, I mean, that is probably what I'd feel like doing, but even if it's not doing something physical, it's even just not buying into getting that upset,
right.
or getting angry and judging and blaming, trying to stay in a neutral place.
Right,
while I'm supporting that person.
Right. Actually, I mean, ideally what I described is what happens. But in practice, what happens probably more is that you find yourself being pulled in.
Yes. That's me for sure.
Right. And for many of us, so it's a retreating, it's catching yourself wanting to be pulled in like that and just, you know, realizing rapes, then that this is only happening, you know, it's only my mind in need of healing here. That's the only thing that needs to be fixed. We're the same. And so if I really just keep my focus on the healing of my mind, which means going back again to that inner teacher, you know, please show me how you see this person, how you see this situation, how to heal my own mind here. The result is what I described.
Uh-huh.
So does that make sense? So uh-huh. when I return to that awareness that I'm sharing with you know, our right mind, when we become right minded, then the result is that you know, we're not joining them there. And you know, people for the most part, I mean, you would think that would be perceived. I mean, I remember thinking when I first started practicing this that would be perceived as some kind of breach, or you know, because in the past I so much had joined that way.
Uh-huh.
But it really hasn't been perceived that way. I mean, I think for the most part the love is there, and if we can accept it for ourselves, that's what the Course means by accepting the atonement for ourselves. If we can accept it within ourselves, we're making it more available. We're demonstrating mm-hmm. that availability to the other person, and there's a sense of safety that is there, you know, that we're held in, and they may react, you know, how they react is not up to us, but we're told by Jesus that this practice is healing to all minds, because they're just as the one.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I am saying I am actually being hateful if I join with their with that with their weakness instead of the strength within us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an attack. It doesn't look like that to the world in the 2+2=4 world, as Ken Wapnick would say, but it truly, on the level of truth, it's an attack, because it's saying that we're different and there are enemies, and there's, you know, the ego thought system of one or the other is alive and well.
Right, and just reinforcing that, you've got a reason to be sad, or you've got a reason to be afraid.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what we're telling them.
Yes, we're telling them, and yes, you're a victim, and victims and victimizers don't deserve love, you know? I mean, that's what we're mm-hmm. saying when we side with victims.
Mm-hmm.
What about the victimizer? I mean, the victimizer is coming from the same hurtful place as the victim. And so, you know, I mean, that's not the way the world looks at it, but that is the truth. And we all play both of those roles, maybe not in as horrific ways, you know, there seems to be a hierarchy of how people act that out, but we all are victimizers at one time or another, and victims, and we trade that back and forth.
Yes, and in fact, I don't know if I mentioned this to you before or not, but months ago I was reading something, and it was this very point, because it was a story about two sisters that were imprisoned by the Germans, by the Nazis specifically, during World War II, and they were just horribly treated. And one of the sisters said to the other one, if and when we get out of this, we have got to find a way to help mm-hmm. these people. And that sister died. But when the other sister was out of prison, she said, over time, I began to realize that when she said to me, if and when we get out, we need to help these people, I assume she meant the people like us. And she said, now I have come to realize she meant the people that were doing this to us.
Wow. Yeah.
I know. So powerful. Just
that
so
is really powerful.
Powerful.
And, you know, that dawning awareness of that is a result of practicing this course. I mean, we really do begin to see the sameness in people. And because we begin to see, practicing this gives us permission to look at the darkest recesses of our,
yes.
of our, you know, cauldron of guilt within. And all the shameful secrets that we think we've kept in the hateful thoughts. And being able to look at those with this principle, this symbol of unconditional love and forgiveness beside us within our mind, is going to enable us to see that everyone is the same. We're going to be able to begin to let people off the hook, because we know that we have an ego too, and the ego is capable of horrible things within the dream. But that doesn't change the love that we are. It doesn't change the love in anybody. And if we can begin to accept that in ourselves, that is going to be available to others. I mean, this, you know, that forgotten song section of the course that talks about this call, this melody that plays from beyond the dream, that everyone hears that. And if mm-hmm. we can begin to join with that more and more, through this practice, I mean, that's going to make that song stronger, and you know, in ways that we don't understand, it's demonstrating that opportunity to hear that music to all, and you know, people will do it in their own time, but we can support the power of the same decision making mind and the same principle of love in their mind that we have. And recognize that anything else is just coming from the same fear that we have, and it's a formidable fear.
Yes. Well, and I'm thinking back to what Ken had said about this very topic, and one thing I noticed that was so striking is he said, we really can't be even present with somebody if we're buying into the pain.
Yeah.
Once we go to the dark side, once we're joining with them with the ego, we're not even present with them anymore. We're not available to them, we're not present, and we're not doing them any good. And, you know, he put it in terms of you cannot be present. And so the only way you can really be of help, the only way you can be present is to get right back in your right mind. And then he said something too. He said, and then you will be there in the form that somebody else needs.
Absolutely. And again, in form, it may look the same. You may be, you know, I mean, you're still holding their hand. Mm-hmm. You're still hugging. You're still, you know, you're still sitting by someone's bedside and singing to them, if that's something that would be helpful, or, you know, whatever the form would be comforting to them, it will just come, and you'll still do it, and you would not refuse to do something that meets them in the condition they think they're in, you know, just because it's not real. I mean, you would do the normal kind things, but at the level of the mind. But, you know, again, what I recognize in myself, and I can tell when I'm right-minded or wrong-minded in a situation like that, is really by the level of you know, whether my emotions join theirs or not. And when they join in a way that is, you know, joining with their pain and siding with their sense of victimization, then I know that it's my mind in need of healing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I know I'm not, as you said, I know I'm not present anymore for them. You know, just something I want to mention along those lines, because you mentioned Ken again, and the same conversation I was having with a friend yesterday, we were both talking about how a couple of times we had, she had been, also been out to Temecula, and, you know, Ken made himself available to everyone, and he was just incredibly, but again, you know, because there was no sense of lack within him, and so he was infinitely sort of available, and you know, so people would approach him during breaks and things, just for a few minutes, but he would, with a question or whatever, you would see him kind of off in corners with people, and she was describing a couple times that she had done that, and he would always take both of your hands and just look at you. And she said the couple of times that this happened for her, she completely forgot what her questions were. She just felt, because she felt the love that was within him and within us all. It's just like she just became instantly right-minded. And so in that love, all questions and problems disappear. And I had a similar, you know, I had interviewed him several, like 4, 5, 6 times, I don't know. And I would go with these lists of questions and sit with him, you know, for an hour or something out there. And you know, I'd have quite a few questions usually at the beginning. And he would do the same thing. He would take both of your hands and look at you. And, you know, I'd have to just like rip up half of the questions because, you know, it became sort of ludicrous, and we would laugh because most of them just, you know, I already knew the answers then.
Right.
So that's kind of what, you know, that's the top of the ladder. It's what we're learning how to do. And we practice within our relationships how to do that. And the practices, you know, in a situation like what you're talking about, of being with people who are seem to be in distress or ill or whatever, you know, it's really just recognizing our quality and our same need for healing, and you know, being very mindful of where my mind is, where my allegiance is within the mind. That's how to be kind, you know, to work on
mm-hmm.
that.
Well, and it's interesting because I was thinking as you were talking about Ken, years ago, I saw Deepak Chopra speak. Mm-hmm. But it was before he really became very well known. And in fact, I've told people this, he was like in a little school auditorium in Boulder, Colorado.
Mm.
And now when I look back on it, it's just like phenomenal. That was Deepak Chopra.
Right.
But I was so impressed with him from the minute I saw him because he just exuded a certain presence. But the other thing I remember is afterwards I stood and I watched him signing books. And the way he signed books was really phenomenal because he maintained eye contact with the people almost mm-hmm. the entire time. And I remember just watching him and thinking he could be saying anything, he could be writing anything, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because he was just, I'm here for you in this moment, and nobody else exists. And it was just such an amazing thing to watch him, in a sense, just give them credibility, give them presence by just looking into their eyes and being there and refusing to be this man, you know, sitting at a table with one more person asking him a question, or, you know, he was not distracted by anything around him. Whoever was in front of him at that moment was all that he could see.
Yeah, just to be fully present with someone. It's you know, what a thing to learn. We're not even fully present to ourselves most of the time. You know?
Right. And I mean, what a gift.
It's,
I mean,
such
that's
a gift.
What a gift to those people.
Yeah. I think that, again, that's the practice, and that's what we're learning to do in our relationships, and what brings us there is being mindful of what's blocking us from being there, what comes up, you know, within ourselves when we're not there, and really working with that, to look at how difficult that is for me to be present with someone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how so every relationship becomes what the Course calls a holy encounter, in which we have an opportunity to reconnect, remember the real relationship within, and offer that same choice to everyone and everything. And you know, but that really means the willingness to really look at how afraid we are to do that, how we don't want to do that, how quickly we become pulled into our own story, to someone else's story, to what we hear on the news. I mean, the practice is an undoing in that sense. It's really not that positive focus, but the focus on recognizing the, you know, the blocks, the negative that comes up,
mm-hmm.
and within myself and my own fear, and then trying not to, you know, trying to be gentle with myself, because we can't be present with someone else if we're condemning ourselves. It's going to get projected out, and so we have to work with the guilt within ourselves first.
Mm-hmm. And we can't really be present when we are responding to what I'd call just an incredible amount of baggage. You know, like, I mean, here's an example. One of my dogs did say, well, basically what they do, they've been really intent. They killed a skunk a few weeks ago. And so,
dogs.
Oh, yeah. So now they are so intent every night on being out in the backyard. And
find,
I know,
exactly another one,
what,
right?
They want. Yeah. They're like, you know, they think they're guarding the yard or something, and they just will not come in. And I have so lost it with them, because it'll be midnight or something, and they go out the dog door, which I've now learned the dog door has to get closed earlier in the evening, but they will not come in. And ordinarily, I mean, at least one of them, she will listen to me and she will come, but they will not. You know, they're like in the back recesses of my yard, and my yard is pretty big, and it's kind of scary at night because it's dark and there's big pine trees, and they're out there and they will not come in. Mm. And I realized one night how incredibly angry I was getting. And I realized it had less to do with them not coming. It was keying into all my issues of not being listened to, or not being paid attention to, or not getting what I think I deserve, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, these poor dogs, they're getting like the brunt of my wrath that has to do with a lifetime of feeling those emotions.
Absolutely.
And it became so obvious to me, because my anger was so disproportionate to what was really going on.
Right.
And that's where I'm thankful to the Course, because when that happens, all of a sudden I can go, yeah, what's going on here? You know, it gives me kind of the vehicle or the mechanism to say, yeah, really? You're this angry about the dogs not coming in?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And wow, you know, I mean, I just seem like a maniac. And yet I could see it. I could feel it. My peace of mind was a million miles away.
You were
ready
to murder.
This? Yes, exactly. I was ready to murder. And it's like, really? Over this? You know, they're being dogs. I know what happens is, you know, of course they could be better trained, but instinct takes over. And if there's a raccoon or a skunk out there, they're not listening to me.
Right.
You know,
right.
But
the dogs are irrelevant, aren't they? They're completely irrelevant.
They're totally irrelevant. And because that's it. You just kind of step back and that's it. I am a murderer. I am just like totally losing it over something that is not worth it. And there again, am I really being present with them? Am I being spontaneous in the moment? Absolutely not. Because I'm reacting to, like I said, a whole baggage full of hurt feelings or something.
Right, right. You're decided to take it personally. You wanted to be a victim of your dogs, you know, and again, to prove that you exist, but it's not your, you know, the reason that you lost your peace was because of these dogs.
Yes.
And you know, we're always looking for, it doesn't matter. I mean, that, and it is, it's so useful to see, as the Course tells us, that the, you know, there's no hierarchy of illusions. The minor, you know, there is a minor twinge of annoyance hides the thought of murder, you know.
Yes.
And the thought of murder is always a reflection of that original thought of murder. Mm-hmm. Daddy, we you know, we made the new kingdom, we destroyed yours, and now, you know, somehow Daddy's going to miraculously, you know, rise from the grave and come and find us and strike us blind, you know.
Yeah. Well, and kind of going back to the clubhouse, all of a sudden I'm realizing that's it. It's like, you know, yeah, he's going to be pretty pissed when he realizes we're not coming in, you know.
He's
calling and we're not coming in, just like the dogs won't come in. You know, we're out here, and the longer we stay, boy, he's going to be pretty mad at us.
right. Yeah, we're kind of always on the run, you know, and again, we're always looking, but the point that you were making about, it's really just watching our reactions. That is the practice of forgiveness, you know, and watching and saying, you know what, the dogs are irrelevant. I became afraid of love again. I wanted to destroy that kingdom again and push that love away and prove that I really have.
Yes.
And, you know, and make it real, make the error real. And you know, that's not true. It's a lie, and I want to see things differently. I could see peace instead of this. And that's all we do. You know, becoming aware of it, that the dogs are not the cause, really is all we have to do, and asking for the peace to return and waiting. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness does nothing. That's it. That's all we do is watch our mind. And I don't know if you probably have experienced this too, but I think that we're so much more in touch with our fury than we had been when we came to the Course, and we were just robotically projecting on other people. So we were so convinced that the problem was relevant, that the problem was the dogs, that the problem was the government, that the problem was our special relationships, the problem was in my body, the disease in my body. And now we are at least questioning, or being asked to question, that's the practice in every instant, that's not the problem. What's the real problem here?
Yeah. Well, and as long as we believe that it's outside of ourselves and we don't have any control over it.
Right.
You know, once you all of a sudden realize, hey, I have a little control because I can change my perception. Right. I can actually change whether or not I feel like a victim to this situation.
Yes. And I have a teacher that will show me how to do that, because I myself seem to, you know, really think that this is because I'm upset because of the dogs that will not come in here.
Yes.
You know, so I kind of can't directly get there. That's the whole idea of turning to this part of our mind that, you know, until we know for certain at the top of the ladder that we are that, we still need to have that symbol that seems to be other than us that we can turn to for help, you know?
Yes.
Because the direct route doesn't get us there, you know? Just again, it just gets us to try to cover it over again, you know. I should and judge ourselves. I should be peaceful here. Why am I doing this? You know,
right?
And we don't. I mean, whereas when we join with that loving teacher within, we're forgiven.
Right.
Oh, well, I became afraid of love again. You know, it's okay. I really didn't. It was just a mistake. There is no sin here. Not in them. Not in me. There is no guilt.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of brings us full circle back to this whole thing of what is salvation. It, you know, all that we're ever trying to correct is a mistake. It's just a mistake in our thinking.
Right.
And it can be corrected.
And it was instantly corrected because it was impossible. It was an impossible dream. So, yeah. And so, we have a way, a process, this practice of forgiveness that is going to lead us back up the ladder separation, let us down. That's going to, you know, help us to see that we're playing a game and to yes. see that ultimately this game is hurting us, and we really want to go home and get back, you know, in Daddy's palace and have a nice meal and take a bath and go to bed.
Yes.
And give it up.
That's right. Well, Susan, this has been so much fun today, and we really only have about 5 minutes to close out the show. So what I'd like to ask you is if you have any other parting comments, or do you have any announcements that you would like to tell the audience?
Well, you know, the only announcement, I think, would be that I've been, I don't know if I mentioned this when we last spoke, but I've been interviewing the teachers, the three teachers that teach at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles in Temecula, which is Ken's teaching or Ken Wapnick's teaching organization. And I posted a interview with Laurel Reeves about 3 weeks ago or so. That's on my website at foraysinforgiveness.com. And I just posted the second one of those with Jeff Siebert that is also at foraysinforgiveness.com. And they're just such, I mean, talk about rich. They're rich interviews in which they're really speaking about their journey with the Course, their journey working with the Foundation, and collaborating with Ken. It's I found actually interviewing them to be an unexpectedly moving experience and healing experience, because it's just, you know, they're so dedicated to learning and living this Course and healing their own mind and really looking at all the blocks to love's awareness within themselves. And so they're very inspirational, down-to-earth interviews. And, you know, I would encourage people to read the interviews and to think about at some point in their journey with this Course going out to the Foundation and you know, visiting there and signing up for some of these workshops. The other announcement, a little plug for the Foundation that I'd like to make, is that there's a 50% off sale going on all of Ken Wapnick's books at the bookstore at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles website, and it's a great opportunity to get you know, some of these wonderful books that Ken has written. I would especially recommend the Journey Through the Workbook. That is a larger book. This is a good time to buy it at 50% off. What a deal! Mm-hmm. Or the Journey Through the Manual. Both of those are just phenomenal tools and companions to the study of the Course if you don't have them. So, or any of the books there. He has a wonderful series of small books on kindness and ending our resistance to love, and on and on. And you know, it's a very rich. resource. So, you know, you might want to check that out.
Yeah, and that's at www.facim.org. And okay. Susan, thank you so much for announcing that again. I think I did on last week's show, but I even went myself, and that's exactly what I bought, is I bought the Journey Through the Workbook.
Yeah, oh, it's wonderful. You'll love it.
Because, yeah, 50% off. How can you resist?
What a bargain.
Yeah, I already had the Journey Through the Manual, but I didn't have that one, and I thought, oh, this is the time to get it for sure. So thank you for reminding everybody. And also, thanks for reminding us of your interviews. And Susan's website is Forays, which is Forays, in forgiveness.com. So please go check out those interviews. And Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'll look forward to talking to you in October. And
okay,
I want to say thanks to the listeners and everybody in the chat room. Thanks to Greg. He's always there every week. Thank you so much. And Ivy and Leck and Carrie and Elizabeth. So thank you so much for being there. I do read your comments during the show, and I appreciate your being there. And thanks to Scott Weaver, our producer today. And remember, you can always find me for readings, personal consultations, mentoring, and coaching on 12listen.com. And on Tuesdays, you can find me for my other radio show, Simple Tales, where we talk about astrology and other spiritual concepts as well. You have about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea, or be back in time for The Through Line with Christine DeMaurier, coming up next on Fabulous Fridays on 12 Radio. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.